All right. Welcome, everyone. This is the Verifiable Credentials API call. This is June 21st, 2022. Our agenda is here. Agenda. On the agenda today is options, options, options. So option processing for all the VC API endpoints. I'm sure all of us will be sick of talking about options by the end of the call. But that's basically it for the agenda, today. We've got a couple of other kind of questions around who's implementing what endpoints. But yeah, that's it. That's it for the agenda. We'll also do, you know, introductions, relevant community updates and start out with that. We have a couple of those things going on. Any other updates or changes to the agenda? Anything else folks would like to discuss today, before we get started? Okay. And Eric, I'll note we'll want to talk about the status of the use cases and what the next step is there after we do introductions and community updates.
Sounds good.
All right, so let's go ahead and jump into introductions and relevant community updates. All right, anyone here that would like to reintroduce themselves, since we know who most of the folks are here? Any new reintroductions? All right. Any updates, just community updates in general? I've got one, and that is that the very first Verifiable Credentials 2.0 working group meeting is happening next week. So first VC2WG meeting is next week. Brent Zundel, one of the chairs, announced it. It is 11 a.m. Eastern, which I guess puts it around 4 p.m. or 5 p.m. depending on where you are in Europe. If you have not rejoined, please do so. You need to rejoin the group to recommit to the IPR agreement. They will be posting an agenda later on this week. Just as a heads up, the two co-chairs are Brent Sundell, who co-chaired the VC, part of the VC. Actually, did he do VC1.0? I think he did part of it, right? He definitely was a co-chair of the DID working group. Brent's great. And then we have Christina Yasuda from Microsoft. I think this is, I don't know if this is her first time chairing a W3C group or not, but she's, excuse me, also done quite a bit of work on mobile driver's license and that sort of thing at Microsoft. So, and then Yvonne Herman's going to be our staff contact, along with Pierre Antoine, who are both, you know, really wonderful people as well. So we're in very good hands, is what I'm trying to say. And it'll be exciting to see everyone, again, new faces and old faces. Any questions or concerns about that, before moving on to other announcements? All right. Any other, announcements, relevant community updates, anything of that nature? Dimitri, I've got a question for you. Anything public about kind of what JFF or VCEDU is going to do next?
Yes. Now, so this is still subject to change, but I believe the current plans are to do the next JFF Plugfest, the successor to this first one, that will involve, most likely issue API. The day before the autumn IIW at the Computer Science Museum, History Museum. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah.
So wait, in person, day in before?
Person day before.
Interesting. Cool. What, do you know what the date for that is?
yes. So that is, 1 second. So that's November 14th.
Okay, cool. Well, good. There's quite a bit of time between now and then.
Right, right. Everybody brush up on your APIs, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Good. Okay, good. For those of you that weren't a part of the first Plugfest, I think we had, a grand total of 3 weeks to really implement and demonstrate some level of, VC display interop. But it was good. It got everyone.
Yeah, people did well. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's, yeah, it was good. Okay. Thanks for that, Dimitri. That's good. That gives us a bit of planning. Is there any thoughts about, what APIs, if any, or did methods, if any, or is that just like the topic of the next discussion?
That's really the topics. As you can probably imagine, there is three or four different lanes or groupings or communities. The VC API, OpenID Connect family of protocols, and of course Wacky DidCom. So one of the challenges of the Plugfest is, do we demonstrate interop within that particular lane, and then for the overachievers, wallets that can speak the different families of protocols. So basically that's the topic that is going to be the subject of much argument on the mailing lists.
Or agreement. We're just all going to agree with each other. We're just going to agree on a single protocol.
That's right. I do not mean to cast aspersions preliminarily.
Put all of this behind us. It'll be great. All right. Any other updates or anything, community updates before we go into use case updates? All right. Eric, over to you. Eric and Joe, over to you. Where are we on use cases? When should we talk about them next? Et cetera, et cetera.
Sure. So I think since the last time I gave an update, Joe and I have had some discussions and our plans have somewhat shifted a little bit. This is still dealing with somewhat of the fallout of Juan dropping off, so plans change. But effectively, we accepted the existing PR that was in the use case GitHub. And I am working on what I believe is up to 7 PRs, one for each of our 6 use cases, and then a general one to respond to some of Tall Ted's requests for some just minor, formatting changes here and there. So I'm planning on having those 7 PRs in by next week. Hopefully that'll give us a better platform for talking about each use case individually, worked out some bugs with the mermaid stuff and rendering, I think, as well. So I think next week would maybe be a good time to take a look at the GitHub repo and its current state. I don't know if there's going to be too much to discuss because I have a feeling it'll be more useful for people to kind of take their own time outside of this call for some sense of that. To review, and then maybe if we have issues, we can come back the following week or in subsequent weeks and have discussions then. But look for those PRs in the next week. Before this call next week, I'll have them.
Awesome. Great. Thank you for that and for all the work there, Eric. I really, really appreciate that. And Ted and Joe, as well, for input, I'm sure. I put myself on the queue, to say I finally got around to fixing that mermaid, flow diagram rendering thing, in respec. So I don't think it does any of the weird vertical height stuff anymore. And there's a new release out there. So I don't know if you saw that, Eric, but if you didn't,
yep. I did.
Okay.
Yep, and I'll take a look during this PR process. One last thing I wanted to mention is that Joe and I have also decided to move our 6 use cases that we have so far to the focal use cases section of that document and start to cherry pick kind of a more breadth of use cases from both the VC use cases document and the DID use cases document. So that will kind of expand the breadth of that. So if anyone has any use cases from there that they'd like to see appear in the VC API, please either submit a PR or make an issue and let us know.
Cool. Awesome. Thank you for that. Okay. Any questions or concerns around the use cases document? Do either of you have, I have one. Do either of you have, an idea around like how this gets into the VC working group or not, in this iteration? Do you feel like it might be in a position where you would want it as a use cases document published as by the VC, working group?
I'll toss that one to Joe.
No audio.
Can't hear you.
So, yeah. Joe's reloading.
I guess while we're waiting for him, my initial thoughts would just be that similarly to how we want to start cherry picking use cases from both the DID use cases document and VC use cases document, I think that there's a good chance that some of this will flow into it. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if one-to-one copy would make sense or not.
Mm-hmm.
Probably try to leave that to the VC2 group to decide. But hopefully there's going to be some interesting use cases that we could cherry pick out that might make sense.
Yeah, let's go with that. Joe, is your audio working? Nope, still no audio. Okay, we can bring that up. You could type out what you're saying, Joe, if it's short. But we can come back and discuss this on a future call as well. It's a good candidate for It's a good candidate for adoption by the VC working group. Okay, good. Just wanted to see if there was interest there from working on use cases to pull that work in. Okay. Sounds good, Joe. You might want to raise an issue. I don't know. Well, we can just bring it up. Our first meeting's next week, so, you know, we can just bring it up there. All right. Moving into the core of the agenda now. We're going to start talking about options. So the specification, this came up during testing. Andrew Jones has been working on the test suite and noted a bunch of issues with the OAS files, specifying things for options that no longer make sense or we're not using and that sort of thing. So, we're going to go ahead and take a look at that. Let me go ahead and share my screen. Okay. So I think this is it. And then let me pull up the VC API as well. And right now we are going to look at issue credential and specifically the options for issuing a credential. And right off the bat, there's some errors here or things that look like, they're wrong, to a certain degree. So every single one of the endpoints that we have has this options object. One of the first questions Andrew had was, is the options thing optional or not? Like, do you have to specify options or can it be an empty object? That kind of stuff. Joe, well, you've got, let's see if you have audio, if you've rejoined, because you added some things here to start us off.
How about now?
Yes, I hear you.
New browser. I realize procedurally this might be an annoying place to raise this, but maybe it's just a new issue on its own. But we still don't have our endpoint specifying which component is hosting that endpoint and who's expected to call it. And I think that's confusing a lot of the conversations about, are we talking about an endpoint on a verifier app or on the verifier service? And those end up, I feel, being very different surfaces. So without that, it's hard for me to even understand which options we're talking about.
Yeah, plus one to that. And you've been very consistent about, you know, that being an issue. And I think the group agrees that's an issue. So, would it be okay if we, specify which endpoint we're talking about? Like which app we're talking about? Sorry, which thing we're talking about? Like whether it's the issuer app or the issuer service that we're talking about before launching into a conversation?
Yeah, I think that's great. I mean, I think that the key thing is for us to have a good conversation, I think we need to have that defined. I think once we do, we can talk about it. And then I think there's a second question is how do we get the spec text updated so that it incorporates that in some way?
Yep. So maybe we could identify, maybe we can add something to the OS to say, oh, this is meant to be exposed through the issuer app, or it's meant to be exposed through the issuer service, or it's meant to be exposed through both. I don't know if we have any endpoints like that, but maybe we can just kind of tag each one of the endpoints on with respect to where they're expected to be, which system they're expected to be exposed on. Thoughts on that? Like, type some of that out.
I don't know OAS enough to know if that's sort of the right way to do it, but it sounds reasonable.
Okay. Well, if it's not supported by OAS, we can just put it in the respec proper to start. I guess I was asking the question conceptually. So conceptually, do each one of these endpoints map to one or more roles in the ecosystem that can decorate or one or more, what are we calling these things? Systems, Joe? What's an app and a service? Is that a system? Is it a role?
I've been calling them components. I think that's the language with that first diagram, in the VC API itself where we identify those components.
Hard to read English, but oh well. Need for PR, add a descriptor to each endpoint that lists which components it's expected to be attached to. Okay, so that's the first thing. So credential issue. So this endpoint is expected to be exposed on an issuer service. That's what implements it, but it could be exposed through the issuer app. That's a question, it's an assertion that's looking for people to say, no, that sounds wrong.
Okay.
Go ahead, Dave.
I'm going to go ahead and assert that it sounds wrong.
Okay, so what's wrong about it?
Part of it that seems right is it's exposed on the issuer service. I don't know what it would look like to expose it on the issuer app.
Is a software as a service thing an issuer app?
No, I don't think so. I would think that would be an issuer service.
Joe? Oh, go ahead, Sean. You're on the queue.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about what this would look like if I were to implement it. It wouldn't be, so I'm plus one to Dave. It wouldn't be on an issuer app. We think of it as a developer service. So it would feel to a SaaS developer like a low level API or a low level library that they would implement.
What are we, is an issuer app, Joe, is an issuer app, is a website an issuer app? Like just like a human facing website. And then if it exposes APIs, is it still an issuer app or does it become an issuer service at that point?
So certainly a website could fulfill any of these roles. I mean, I think I do not personally make a distinction between JSON-based APIs as being magical endpoints any different than a website URL as an endpoint. Mm-hmm. The difference that we put into the architecture is that an app executes the business rules and policies, whereas the service component is providing generic services at the behest of an app. So in the scenario that we use for U.S. permanent residence card, there was a mock website for USCIS, which held the business logic about who was supposed to get what credentials issued. And that website spoke over the back end to the verifier or the issuer service, to get those credentials issued. So the touchstone that I've used is you know, the business rules that are specific to that application as opposed to a generic service, which is that software as a service separation.
Okay, so one way to look at this is anything that provides generic services is a service, like the issuer service, verifier service, and things that have business logic in them are the apps.
That's right. That's how I tend to think about it.
Okay.
The other thing I would add to that is that that business logic acts as a gating factor for the application to decide whether or not it's going to use the service. So there's sort of a trust boundary thing. That's how I tend to think about it.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Good. That seems nice and clean, architecturally. Okay. All right. So credentials issue is on the issuer service. Full stop. It has the way you use it is you send it an unsigned credential and it will basically, attach a proof to it and send that proof back. In previous calls, we seemed to have come to agreement that these, issuer service endpoints, especially this one is configured, is pre-configured through some kind of out-of-band mechanism to use a specific key material, to use specific revocation list formats. Basically, the endpoint is configured with all of these things. So calling and dynamically changing the signer and the credential status mechanism and all that kind of stuff is complexity that we seem to have shied away from. Okay, so that's kind of the background for the options object here. We have some weird things in here, like, for example, challenge and domain. Challenge and domain are typically used on presentations. They are not used in credentials, when signing credentials, I think. And then for credential status, I think what we've said is that thing, credential status, is not settable anymore, or by default, it's something that's pre-configured on the endpoint, and not, settable when you make the call. Dave, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I was just going to say that the challenge and domain, which could also sort of be understood as an audience, are things that are used with authentication proofs. And those are not the kinds of proofs that you put on VCs. You put assertion proofs on them. And so challenge and domain, I don't think makes sense here. And credential status, as mentioned, would be something that was already configured, for the system. So that would also, or for that particular issuer endpoint or configuration. And so that wouldn't make sense as an option either.
Okay, so we've got a plus one from Sean. Okay, so that means that the PR should strike challenge domain and credential status from the options. Any objections to doing that? Okay, I'm hearing no objections. I'm worried that there's some kind of misrendering going on here, so I'm going to go and look at the OAS just temporarily. Let's see here. I don't know, it would be in like, issuer credential options. Yep, here it is. Okay, all right. So we're talking about striking challenge domain credential status. Okay. And there are no objections to that. Need our remove, what is it? Challenge domain credential status. So remove challenge domain and credential status from the list of settable options for the issue endpoint. Here we go. Issuer service endpoint. Okay. Yeah, that's a good question, Coyote. Default is the current system time for created. So we have a default. We don't have normative language around that default, but that's fine. We can fix that later. There's another question around options. Is the options object itself optional? Like, could you just do credential colon and put in a credential and then just leave options completely blank? I suggest it is totally optional.
Plus one to that.
We don't have any mandatory options, right?
Yeah, plus one to that as well.
Okay, all right. So the next need for PR asked if the options object itself was optional, or if we had three options. Okay. Dimitri and Hyode, we have no mandatory options and the options object is completely optional. It's not need to be specified. That's true for, and can be omitted, thank you. And can be omitted. Is this true across the entire API? Clearly we'd have to look at every single endpoint, but I think it's true across the entire API. Because if it's not an option, if it's in options, we shouldn't be doing this whole mandatory options thing.
It will probably be true for the whole API, but as you said, we need to look.
Okay. Okay, so we'll keep that in mind as we go along, but ensure that when there are no mandatory options, which should be true for all endpoints, that the options object be omitted. Okay. All right, that's another PR. Okay, so that's for that endpoint. Just gonna comment that so we don't lose it. Next topic is, or are the options for credentials verify? And that is still this issue. Discussion around credentials verify. This is best on the call. Go ahead, Dimitri.
So I'd like to propose that we tackle the topic of verifier options from the end, right? Like, Amazon purportedly starts with the press release before doing the design. I would recommend that we backwards from that. Here's why I would propose that. Most of the verification UI implemented so far tends to at least we're treating verification as binary. Even though we do have a little bit of fine-grained results, right? We have a list of errors. We have a list of checks performed. But I would like to propose we go one step further and have the verify API return back a list of events and then pass-fail on each one of them. So, for example, right, the reason I mentioned start with the UI first is we imagine a wallet or a verifier app displaying an overall status, verified or not, but then displaying the details, a list of, okay, expiration date checks out, the signature checks out, but the key was revoked or the credential was revoked, right? So my proposal is, and this would affect the options object, which is why the working backwards part. What if we change the verify API to return an overall result, but also an events log, which would be objects, similar to the checks performed, but with more detail. And so if people think that's a good idea, that might help inform the verify options list, in case somebody wants to not perform all of the checks, but just a subset. So that's it.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds intriguing, Dimitri. I think plus one to exploring that. I think, you know, we probably, and you included this in what you said, right? I'm concerned that, we need a simple yes, no response back, with more detail, which is what I think you're suggesting.
Yes. So definitely both. Definitely both.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's take a look at the endpoint. Does anyone have, any, concerns about going down this path?
Yeah, I put myself on the queue. I think if you ask the Verifier API to verify credential or VP and it's all okay and you get the result back, I don't think the event log is needed. I think that is for a case where there's something not quite right. So I think this event log should be optional, and requested or not. And, should only be requested in the case of, something going wrong. If you've gone down the sweet path and everything's working okay, why do you want to process an event log that says, yeah, the time was okay, yeah, the signature was okay, yeah, it wasn't? I mean, it just seems pointless to me.
Thank you, David. Go ahead, Dimitri.
So my response to that would be, one reason why it might be a good idea to provide an event log in success as well is because different verifier services will perform different checks, right? So it informs the user exactly what do we mean by this is verified. Did this particular service check the revocation status, or did this particular check, check for the issuer's keys revocation? Right, not all services will be doing that. Hence, the level of detail.
So what you're saying, in effect, is there may be bad implementations that don't do a thorough job, and therefore we want an event log that a bad implementation wouldn't include the information anyway, would it? It's a bad implementation. It didn't check revocation, so it's not even going to say anything about revocation, is it?
Okay, so you're absolutely right that we don't want this mechanism to shore up non-conforming implementations. But so far, the specs and the implementations leave a lot of leeway for implementers, which should be a separate discussion topic. But also, even business logic-wise, you don't always want to, like, just as an example, right? In the U.S., with the driver's license, when using a physical driver's license for age verification, the verifier looks at the date of birth, but also, in some cases, looks at the expiration, right? So some venues will say, yeah, even if this is a valid license and you're of age, because the credential has expired, we're not going to accept it. And then other venues will say, no, we don't care that it's expired. You're old enough. Go ahead. And so to model that use case. Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead, Dimitri. I'm just noting that Joe's been on the queue. So Dimitri,
yeah, no.
Joe, and then David.
That's all. So to model that use case, to give the verifier the ability to perform a subset of the checks would be does not necessarily denote a bad implementation. It is still, both are valid implementation.
Right. Thanks, Dimitri. Go ahead, Joe.
I think you both have good points. I think the, seems to be the right balance is to make it optional to include, the event log on a failure value of, I'm sorry, include the event log on success, and that we should probably always include it on failure. I'm looking at this from a debugging standpoint, and I don't know how many times I've misconfigured something and thought it was doing something that I didn't realize it was doing. And this sort of information, maybe I turn it on and do a test, or maybe I just have it on all the time, but I could see in production, you may not want to have that extra traffic. So optional seems like a good way to handle it.
I'm wondering if so these are all good points. I'm wondering if we're confusing verification from validation. I think what Dimitri, I heard you say had a lot to do with validation use cases, not verification. So this is a huge interoperability, could be a big interoperability issue if you have some verifiers saying, yeah, the verifiable credential is valid, and you have other verifiers saying, no, it's not valid. So I think that we made a distinction in the VC1.0 data model. Sorry, we made a distinction in the VC1.0 specification where we said there are two processes active here, verification and validation. Verification checks for things like, is the signature valid? We couldn't even agree on that, right? Cause there were things like, is the credential expired?
That's exactly my point, but the lack of agreement.
Well, I thought what we said was, okay, then we need to split these into two things. And it may be that we need to split this into two different APIs. The Verify API will always do the same thing, regardless of what issuer. Like, there are normative things you have to check for, like the signature being valid, for example. And you have to check for the expiration date as an example. But when it comes to, do you pay attention to any more than that, all of a sudden you're in like validation, and that's where kind of the event log and specific business rules are triggered and that kind of thing. So I'm wondering, one, we can have an event log for both, but I'm wondering if we want to separate verification from validation to have two different endpoints, or if folks feel like we really should have this all on the verification endpoint. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, it depends which endpoint you're talking about. So validation, as is written up in that section on architecture, happens at the app. So the app is the one that knows the business rules and knows whether or not expiry matters, or knows whether a particular issuer is valid for a particular assertion. And my sense of verification was you're checking the crypto and you're checking the status property. And that's it. So if we're talking about having a validation endpoint at the verifier service, I think that's probably a bad idea. I do think it is something that a app needs to handle, and whether or not they'd expose an endpoint for it is to my sense, an internal question for the app developer.
Right. Thank you, Joe. Dimitri, you're up next.
So I think this is a really central question for us, whether we want to separate verification validation into two separate API endpoints. One consideration is that if we do have two separate API points, does that mean the verifier needs to make two API calls? And
which verifier, Dimitri?
The verifying client.
Right. So
that is making the request.
When you said the verifier makes multiple calls, I'm thinking you mean the app calling the service, but I couldn't tell from the question.
Yes, let's say app calling the service.
Right. So in that framing, I think I still hold to what I said before, which is I think the app is responsible for validation, and therefore the app would not be asking the software as a service to check its business rules. The app itself is going to be an embodiment of its own business rules. And if an app calls a bunch of endpoints internally because it's got some microservices architecture, you know, that's up to the app to decide how many endpoint calls they want to make on their own system.
All right. Thanks, Joe. Ted mentioned something in text. David, you're up next.
Can I say there's actually two queues? if you look in the chat, There's a CB bot 1 queue and a bot 2 queue, and I was on I was on CGBot 1Q twice, and then I was on the CGBot queue not at all. So I don't know if there's something going a bit screwy with queuing.
There is. In the Jitsi chat, I can only see one queue. So we'll handle that. That shouldn't.
Okay.
Hopefully.
Yeah. So I agree with Joe. I think we should separate the RP or the app, you know, the relying party or the app from the verifier. And the verifier service is only there to do the verification of a credential. And to address Dimitri's point about the nightclub, then the verification would fail if the credential had expired. But then because the log would be returned on failure, then the nightclub owner would see, it's passed the security in terms of cryptography, but it's expired. Well, I'm happy to let him in with expired. And that would be the app's responsibility. That would be part, if you like, of the validation, not the verification. The verification fails, but the validation works.
All right. Thanks, David. Ted, do you want to vocalize what you put in to the chat channel? I think it was a useful comment.
Yeah, if I can make my mic work. Yeah, what I was saying is basically validation to my mind is business logic, and verification is crypto and basic structure is the thing integral. And the separation of those two endpoints seems optional to me. I can conceive of situations where I would just want one thing for anybody to deal with, and what requests they made to it would govern what process ran and what they got back.
Okay, so the only question I have at that point, Joe said thumbs up to that. Dave Longley, did I see you plus wanting that, or were you plus wanting something else?
I'm in agreement with Joe and Ted. Yep.
Okay, all right. Okay, so that then calls into question the name of the endpoint, because the name of the endpoint is credential/verify, but we're also doing validation in it. How do we square that circle? Go ahead, Dave.
I don't think we are doing validation in there, especially if we look at the definition that we put into the VC data model spec. We're checking cryptography structure and timeliness, which involves credential status and expiry date. And I think all of those things are generic checks that don't involve any complexity for business logic. And we would we would return false from a verification endpoint if any of those checks failed. And if we had an event log, as was described, or whatever we want to call this log, the app could apply business logic rules to make exceptions if it wanted to.
Go ahead, Joe.
Actually,
hold on. I'm sorry. David, is that an old queue?
Yes, it is. It's because they're on the queue three times just to speak once. Yeah.
Got it. Go ahead, Joe. Sorry.
I was mostly just going to agree with Dave. I don't think validation is happening at the verifier service. I think it happens within the app, and it may or may not expose an endpoint. I think we're talking about the verifier service API, which should not be doing validation.
All right. Dimitri, does that gel with your worldview, or is there some, I feel like there's some misalignment, but I can't quite put my finger on it.
It's a reasonable stance. I'm okay with it for the moment to implement it that way. I'll see if I, run into any difficulties, but if we're saying this, if we're saying that, verification is atomic, essentially, though we do want that event log, that there is the question of whether or not we want, optionally to return on success. And Joe made a good point for debugging purposes. It might be a good idea. So that's a good candidate for our options object, which is how we started this whole conversation. But the thing I want to mention is, if we're treating verification versus validation, as atomic, as the thing for the service to perform, it would be really interesting to see some normative language for which exactly the steps we're expecting a verifier service to perform.
Yeah, I agree. That would be, we need that for interop, right? Because if we don't do that, then all of a sudden some implementations are checking for timeliness and other ones are not. And if we're checking for timeliness, then we have to be, maybe have an option where we can override the time, where you're like, I got this in the past. I want to verify it was valid in the past. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, I don't think that's what, timeliness means in this context. I think it means checking the status endpoint.
Okay. I was going for something else there. I agree we need to check the status endpoint, but what happens if the credentials expired yesterday?
Validation rules.
Interesting.
This was to support, right? The revoked, driver's license.
Yep. Okay. All right. So expiration date, issuance date, all that stuff is really about validation, not. I get it. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense to me. Does anyone else have any concerns about that? Okay. What are the steps for? What are the normative language? Check the proof, check the credential status. Check for, it's really check to make sure the issuer, check to make sure that check to make sure the issuer key has not been revoked as of a particular date. Well, I'll just leave this. I think we're going to need a date thing here, because how are you going to check the business rule? What API are you going to call to see if something was valid on a particular date? So let me, here's the issue I'm concerned about. You've got a verifiable credential. The issuer key, was revoked, yesterday, but you really just want to see if the thing was valid the day before yesterday. So you're in the middle of a validation check, but you need an endpoint to call to see if the issuer key was valid at a certain point in time. Joe, go ahead. You're on the queue. No audio from you, Joe.
Okay, sorry. Sorry, I lost my train of thought. The one thing in here that you haven't mentioned is that it's a valid VC. Structural checks have been mentioned, but I don't think we've defined what that means. I don't know if we have a formal schema, for example, those sorts of checks. I'm hesitant to suggest that, temporality is anything other than, a validation check. However, it seems like it would be particularly useful to be able to say, validate this, to the best of your knowledge at a particular point in time. The problem is you can't necessarily adjust all the parameters to go into the past, especially for something like a status check. So I think the semantics have to be what it is right now. And there may be some cases where we could optionally support, check it in the past. However, when you get back that event log, you will know that expiry failed. And so if you have business rules that say, hey, we don't care, we care about yesterday. Then I think your validation process could handle that if it has the event log.
Interesting. Okay. Any other thoughts on that?
My thought would be I would prefer all these things to fail closed, and all of the verification systems can all know about expiration and current time, and they can know that they can check whether or not the current time is between the issuance date and the expiration date, and they can fail when that happens. And if that's returned in an event log, that can be checked by business rules to allow the VC to be used if desired.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. All right. All right. So the PR is to define steps for verification at the verifier service using normative language, which means you check to make sure the structure of the VC is valid. You check the credential schema that's associated with it if one exists. You check to make sure that the issuer key has not been revoked. You check to make sure that the credential status has not marked it as having been revoked. And inevitably, we will go to the VC2.0 API and maybe add additional checks. What do we do when that happens? Go ahead, Joe.
I'm not answering your last question there. It was about, can we generalize the language here for issuer key? I think it should be verification method or something.
Yes. Do that.
Okay, cool.
Thanks. So it seems like the event log, having the event log is a very important thing because in the future, how do you differentiate between what checks are, if we add a check, which is, you know, over the next 10 years, almost inevitable, how do you know whether or not that check was being made?
Wait, so was that a rhetorical question? Or was that a question to the group?
A question to the group. I mean, like, how do you, we're going to add another check at some point in the future. Like, let's just say that, you know, we, for whatever reason, VC1.0 didn't have the credential schema property, and in the future it does. Well, we wouldn't list the credential schema property here, but then, you know, we do. Or if the verification method, let's say we had revoked, but we didn't have suspended, and now we have suspended. See what I'm saying?
So again, this to me seems like an argument for optionally returning the checks performed on success.
Right.
Exactly that.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying is that we're going to need, it's another argument for that. Or it's one of the arguments for that. Go ahead, David.
The other argument is that the standard is normative. It says what the verification steps are, and implementations that conform will return okay, and they don't need to return an event log because we know what they're doing because they conform to the standard. If in the next 10 years something else is added, then that becomes a new version of the standard, and then there are new conformance rules. So then your app is enhanced to conform to the new standard. So it still doesn't require an event log. So I'm really against an event log in the sweet spot where everything works. I think that is just,
What about a requested optional event log?
Oh, if you want to, yeah, I'm happy with Joe's optional for debugging or whatever, and you put it, but it shouldn't be mandatory. I think having it mandatory in the error is fine because you want to know where did it go wrong. You don't have a problem with that.
Got it. I've been not tracking time. We're 3 minutes over. So go ahead, Joe, and then we're going to have to shut the call down.
I was just trying to thumbs up and hit the other thing.
Okay. All right. Good. Okay. So the other part of the PR that's needed is we're going to say we want an event log. It's an optional value, not mandatory, that provides the checks performed. And by default, that's turned off. Okay. All right. Thank you, everyone, for the call and the lively discussion today. We got through a lot of things, especially we've got a number of PRs that need to be raised. So I will go ahead and note that here. And that's it for the call. We'll see everyone next week where we will talk a bit about the use cases stuff and keep going through this options discussion. Thanks all. Bye.
Thanks, Manu. Bye-bye.